Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back. Welcome to the show. It is Action Movie Anatomy here on a Wednesday afternoon, and we are here to salute a brand new general in the Action Army. We have Mr. Daniel Sala. Welcome to the show, guys. We're talking Sin City 2005's epic black and white masterpiece. We can't wait to break the whole thing down for you guys. We will see you in just 1 second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show.
I hope everyone hears me go before the song came on.
Do you hiccup?
I was laughing. That's what I sound like when I'm laughing, apparently.
This is exciting. That's exciting for all the listeners.
What were you saying? Welcome to the show?
Welcome to the show. We're live. This is Action Movie Anatomy. We're here on a Wednesday afternoon. We're talking Sin City. 2005's comic book adaptation, and there's a whole hell of a lot to talk about, so guys, it's Action Movie Anatomy here on the Popcorn Talk Network. We talk action movies on this show. This is the network talking movies, all things movie related, and pop culture by the bucketful. The action movies on this show adhere to four basic rules. Rule number one, hero and the villain, always the smartest people in the room. I don't really know who the hero is in this movie.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure which villain we're going to be targeting, but it's interesting because the villains of this movie aren't actually that smart. They're just evil.
Yeah, I mean, definitely that yellow bastard or Nick Stahl. Yep. He's not really smart. He's just, you know, daddy's boy.
You got Benicio, who's just a moron.
Yeah, totally.
But he's amazing.
Powers Booth. I mean,
Powers Booth is so good.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who the villain is in this movie. Really, I don't know. It's sort of that. It doesn't really follow that rule at all.
Yeah, but it does follow the second rule, which is that the hero always plays by their own rules. And
yes.
I believe that all three of our heroes play by their own rules for the most part, because they're all doing something that it's all about balance.
Yeah,
you know, it's all about finding the good in the world.
Well, okay, so Willis is definitely both the smartest guy in the room and plays by his own rules for sure.
Yeah,
Marv isn't.
In the sense of what?
He's not the smartest guy. He's capable.
No, he's just like a beast.
Yeah, he's capable and he's a beast. And then, yeah, I guess Clive Owen is kind of the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah, I mean, he knows. I think so, because when he's narrating it, he's never like at a moment of like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And I guess they all three do play by their own rules. So rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. Again, I think what's hard about this movie is that it's multiple vignettes, so it's hard to say who it's driven by. But you have a cop. And you have two cops.
Yeah, we can just call Marv a mercenary.
Yeah,
I feel like that's what he did in his life.
And rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. There is one, isn't there?
Yeah, there's an explosion in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Things blow up.
Yeah, because in Old Town, there's like a lot of... he throws the grenade.
The
head.
Grenade, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What's
Benicio's head?
What is his name?
Michael Clark Duncan?
No. The guy, Flanagan, Tommy Flanagan.
Oh,
that's his
sure.
name. The guy with the scar on his face. He's like, I like watching things blow up.
Oh,
all
sure.
Pretty pieces of people blowing up in the sky. Yeah, that guy. He's always such a great.
So many characters in this movie.
Oh, there's so many great characters. It's an incredible ensemble movie.
Yeah, great cameos. So anyway, guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. As we said, we are doing this movie because we have something called patreon.com/teamaction where we upload videos every single week. It's a private feed of original content we don't shoot here. We shoot it in front of a gigantic wall that has Nick Cage's face on it. And we do all kinds of stuff. So we have a couple of top five lists coming out that you guys, the patrons, have been submitting.
Yeah, we do trailer reviews. We do Schmodown review. I mean, honestly, now that you and I have both seen Love, Simon and Unsane this week, we'll probably do a mini AMA on one of those movies since they would never
it's
be on the
gotta
show.
Be Love, Simon.
It's got to be Love, Simon.
Yeah, it's a much better movie than Unsane.
Honestly, we could do one on both. But yeah, Love, Simon was a very good film.
Yeah, we did mini AMA on Annihilation recently. So anyway, if you at the highest level of donation on the Patreon, you become a general in the army. And Daniel Sala is a brand new general in the army. So we salute you, sir.
And Mr. Sala.
He suggested we do Sin City on the show, which is why we're doing it today. So, coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about our thesis statements, fist pump moments, all the fun things we normally talk about, top five Robert Rodriguez movies, and we have a couple great AMA fan questions to break down for you guys as well. So, if you guys have any interest in following with us, you can do that too.
Yeah, you can find him at Ben Bateman Media, and you can find me at Andrew Guy. You can find our Twitter. Wow, I'm very tired. Our Twitter for the show today, at AMA Podcast, and we have two Facebook fan groups, one specifically for this show, which is the Action Movie Anatomy fan page, and there's one that's more Ben and Andrew and Team Action from the Schmodown, and that's the Action Army fan page. Both on Facebook.
Both on Facebook. And I actually, speaking of Action Army, just had my match against Dale the Dude post on Friday.
Was that really a match?
Yeah.
I think he took that hillbilly out in the back and killed him.
Head to head, and it was a hell of a match. It was a hell of a match. Misery.
Was it?
Yeah. It's fun to watch.
I'm just going
to
keep saying that every
time.
It's
fun for me to watch. You shot Jeter. That was an accident. Was it?
Was it?
So, that's the show, guys. So, we're going to get straight into it. And the first thing we do on the show here is we talk thesis statement, which...
Nope.
What?
We got to watch the damn trailer.
Well, I was going to get to that. You just decided to cut me off.
We're all over the place.
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing we're going to do is talk thesis statement after we watch the trailer. Marissa Serafini up in the booth. How you doing, Marissa?
I don't remember this trailer at all.
Me neither. This movie was a big deal when it came out for a lot of reasons that I'm excited to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. And it delivered.
It did.
For the most part.
I think it really did.
I feel like it did 100%.
Looking back on it, it's funny. The way it's aged is really interesting. It hasn't aged to be worse. It's just... Well, I'll get to it in my thesis, actually. But
I like this movie a lot more when it came out than you did, I felt like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you've always been a really big fan of this one.
The truth of Sin City will be shattered.
It's really...
You know who my father is? You can't do a thing
weird
to
see multiple deceased actors in this movie.
Right?
Yeah.
I thought about that too a couple times.
Trippy.
Nothing can stop this.
You got Murphy, Duncan, Booth.
That you're worth
it. Is that it?
Yeah, yeah. Wow,
three.
Murphy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll fight the cops and the mob. We'll go to war.
God, Rosario Dawson is so hot. Can't get over her.
You're in nothing, Dave. They're back.
You're making a big mistake.
Oh, man.
You already made a big mistake yourself.
Benicio's fake nose. Benicio's so good at this.
You're making a big mistake.
Oh, man. A hardtop with a decent engine. And make sure it's got a big trunk.
Yeah, Hartnett showing up just like randomly.
Yeah, it's like a very small, even though he was huge at the time. Or he was on the back end.
Back end.
Doing, yeah.
I think he had, yeah, he had disappeared for a year or two, yeah. That cast.
And honestly, Jessica Alba was just like,
yeah,
changed my life.
She was the Invisible Girl that year.
Hey, she was. That's exactly what I was referencing.
So
it's
that's
an interesting trailer.
I remember watching it now, and I was hyped.
Yeah,
I was super hyped. I mean, so we'll get into our thesis statements here, guys. Thesis statement is your big, bold statement. It's your biggest, strongest argument about the film, and it's the thing that really, like, if the movie comes up, you would say, this is the thing I know about this movie to be true, and you would argue it, and that's what you would do. And my thesis statement is there is no comic book movie more indicative of its time than Sin City ever made. And that would mean it's, I mean, you can say that any comic book movie is indicative of its time to some degree, like the very iconic ones like Superman 78 or Batman 89, talking about something like, you know, Infinity War, Civil War, just like the number of stars. But what I mean by that is, like, this movie in 2005, it came out in the heart of the first run of big commercial comic book movies, where, like, in 2005, they had success, right? Spider-Man 1 and 2 had both been successful. The whole world was like, all right, you know, comic book adaptations are hot. This is hot. But, you know, we're going to push it a little further. We're going to be a little bit gritty. And if you look at the cast in this movie, I think the cast is almost, like, so indicative of its time, it's, like, painful to watch in some ways.
Because it's, like, you feel like you just cut this cast out and be like, these are the people that were in movies from this time to this time.
Yeah, right, because it's like, okay, even just going by the small parts, it's like, Elijah Wood had just done Lord of the Rings and finished it 2 years earlier. So they're like, hey, well, let's put Frodo in a small role. And it's like, Mickey Rourke was just on the front end of his comeback. Like, he wasn't in movies for 10 years before
this.
He just
did The Wrestler before this.
This is right after. The Wrestler's right after. This is right before he comes back for a second. But before that, 10 years prior, he wasn't in movies. He, like, you know, he'd show up for, like, a second, but he wasn't, like, a lead. You think about, like, Clive Owen. Like, Closer was the year before. You know, Born 1 was, like, 2-3 years earlier. It's like, the people in this movie, I mean, Brittany Murphy, she was a movie star at one point in her life.
yes.
I mean, R.I.P. Brittany Murphy, but, like, she was, like, a very famous person at this time.
I mean, everyone in this movie that you've mentioned so far, it has been or will be very famous at one point, whether it's Alba, Murphy, Owen, every single person. And so I think the free reign the studio was willing to give Frank Miller and Robert Rodriguez to make this movie to say, yeah, you can do it how you want to do it. Sure. Absolutely. The guy that wrote the comic book, sure, he's never directed a movie. Let him direct a bunch of this movie. Why not? Comic book movies make money, and this is a beloved comic book. You guys can get this whole cast. Go ahead. Like, I feel like comic book movies today, unless you're Marvel, you don't get the free reign to do this. Marvel and DC, it happens, and the rest of it, like, you don't get casts like this for just, like, random comic book adaptations. This was just because, like, Spider-Man and X-Men were just streaking, and it was like, comic books are hot, let's make one.
Yeah, it's interesting because it was like, they are hot, but again, with those characters, it's man, Batman, Spider-Man, Superman.
Yeah.
It's not Sin City. It's not Watchmen. It's not 300. So it was interesting that they took, and instead of taking a character, they took a world, which I really liked.
Yeah.
And that's going to go directly into my thesis, which is that this is the truest and best direct comic book adaptation movie ever. Not like, oh, Batman's a character, so Dark Knight's the best comic book movie. No. I'm talking about a direct adaptation from a novel, graphic novel, or a specific comic book. There's no comic book called The Dark Knight that is just the story of that Joker, correct?
Yeah, it's a mixture of a couple different stories.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not one movie and one thing. So the fact that he takes four novels, essentially, and puts them into one, and he makes this movie, this linear movie, that they didn't even have to bring in a writer, that they used Frank Miller's book, his graphic novel, to write the script.
Adapted it. Yeah.
For me, and going back and watching it, and also because I wasn't the biggest comic book fan, and now that I've been a big movie fan, and I'm a critic now, whatever you want to call it, and then, you know, you're very well versed in comics, and I actually talked to Schnepp today about the same thing. And when they go and they break it down, like, frame for frame, line for line, character for character, it's like, this is almost identical.
Yeah, right.
And the fact that it's so good still, like, I really do truly love this movie, and I've watched the regular and the director's cut. I think the director's gets a little convoluted, but if you're a true fan, it makes sense, because it's like, those are short stories that are in there. So, Watchmen was fine for me, and from what I've heard from 300, it's close, but it's not quite as on the nose as this is. Straight up.
Yeah, I mean, those are the three.
And
it's all that era, which is interesting.
It's all what comes out at the same time. Yeah,
that's like what I see, like this movie, and then it's like this started that run of those three movies. And now people look back and they're like, yeah, I don't know that I really want to just see what was on the page on the screen. That's not good enough for me to just, like, because Watchmen is like, I think at this point, kind of underrated, but also Watchmen is just that. It's like, we are going to take as much of this and just make it into a movie as we can.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really speak on those things because, like, I haven't read Watchmen and I haven't read Sin City, but you have.
Yeah, so Sin City, the Marv story is the famous one. I think that's called The Long Goodbye or The Hard Goodbye is what it's called. There's like I can't remember the name for it, but I'm pretty certain that's the first Sin City comic. Or if it's not the first one, it's the one that got famous. And that's the story that I read the first time when I read in Sin City. I think I seem to remember that was just called Sin City. Like they just didn't have a subtitle or whatever. The other ones, I think That Yellow Bastard, A Dame to Kill For, those are like follow-up stories. And they're all kind of set in the same world, which is why they're able to link these together. But that's why for me, I could watch the Marv story if this movie was like an hour 29. They like found a way to make them, but I think they couldn't extend that Marv story to make it enough of a movie.
I agree.
So they wanted to extend it and add the other stuff in. Because I think if they could have done that, they probably would have. So because then they could have made like Sin City 1, Sin City 2, like specific books.
Yeah, I did notice that, and I was thinking the same thing when watching it. I was just like, and with the Willis story,
yeah.
I think with those two, I was like, these could be two separate movies. And when I was watching the director's cut, since it rolls credits after each one, I was like, oh, interesting. Like, this is what it could have looked like. They just didn't seem to have enough legs.
Yeah.
And if the legs were there, it would have been falsified or created by a screenwriter.
They would have, they would have added more to it than they needed to. So if you were going to rank the three vignettes, what's your order as far as how you like them?
Damn, that's tough. I think I go Rourke, Willis, Owen in that order.
Yeah, me too. It's the same.
By the enjoyability is strictly.
The Clive Owen section for me is the weakest of the three. It's where that's the part of the movie that I was like, yeah, like this is where this movie's aged a little. The Marv part of it is like the part where I'm like, this movie's fucking sweet. Like they do such a good job with Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, I have a problem with him kind of being
like a superhero, like Clive Owen being a superhero, kind of like Willis and Marvar. I don't know why. It just bothers me more. Like, Marv, it makes sense because he's like this, like, he even says, he's like, he should have been a gladiator.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, like, blah, blah, blah. And then with Willis, it makes sense because it's like, he's like the super cop being driven only by the will to survive and save someone else. And he's gotten repaired and the surgery and all that. And he still dies as, you know, for me, Owen just feels a little less fully thought out.
Do you think that if Jessica Alba, if Willis had actually slept with her at the end of the movie, this movie would be like significantly worse?
What's that?
So because she comes on to him and he doesn't, he gets in the shower. Yeah. Do you think if he had slept with her, this movie would be significantly worse?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, like, because he kisses her. And of course, I mean, I don't know who I'm breaking the news to.
Yeah, right.
Jessica Alba is insanely hot in this movie. Yeah. Like, she's mesmerizing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this guy's been in jail for the last 8 years in solitary confinement.
And he says he's, like, pushing 60 before he goes, so he's got to be almost 70.
Yeah, so, like, the idea, I mean, clearly when you see them on screen, there's not much chemistry between the two of them. The age gap isn't as big as it's supposed to be in the book. But I did think the same thing. I was like, yeah, if he goes to bed with her, this movie's bad.
Watching it again, I couldn't remember if he did or he didn't.
Right.
Watching it again, I was like, is this really gonna happen?
Please, God, no.
Like, this is so weird.
Yeah, I mean, you and I go back and we watch movies from the early 2000s and late 90s, and you see things, you're like, ah, that would, no, God damn it, they did it.
That's,
they did do it.
So
they did it.
Yeah. All right, guys, coming up next on the show, we have our next bit. This is a fist pump moment. If you've ever watched the show, you know this is that moment. Something crazy happens in the movie. You look around. You're just like, are you seeing this right now? This is so good. I get to watch the rest of this movie. You call your buddy. You're like, yeah, you got to take, you know, 17 minutes in the movie. Watch this. It's so good. This movie has a lot of fist pump moments.
There are a bunch. I wrote down so many of them.
Yeah.
Do you have your first one, or do you have your number one, or do you want me to go?
I have a couple. You go first.
Okay. I think... You know what? I think it's when Marv and them, it's the two cops come up and they take him outside. And it's the first time you hear, that's one fine looking coat you got
there. Yeah, yeah, and you know he's going to, yeah,
you know
sure.
he's going to do something, but I just love the brutality of him smashing the dude's face into the wall.
Yeah.
It's like, you see how insanely strong this dude is, and then, yeah, and then he goes and tortures the cop. I love everything that Rourke does in this movie.
He's great.
He is a fist pump.
Yeah, from the second you see him, also because they put so many prosthetics on him and make him look like this character.
Yeah.
He really does resemble Marv from the comics, which I think is one of the coolest things.
Oh, you know what my actual one is?
What?
Yours doesn't involve Rosario, does it?
No, go ahead.
Okay, good, because that was the one that I was trying to think of. It's after he's getting the shit beaten out of him. When he's getting interrogated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And once she realizes that he's, like, not a threat, he's like, okay. And he just stands up and all the ropes go. She's like, you just stood there and took it. Well, Beanie, she's like, I tied the ropes. That's my specialty. And I just loved it because he's just like, he even says, he's like, I'd never hurt a woman, or I'd never lay my hands on a woman,
yeah,
or whatever. And you're just like, God, this guy is awesome.
Yeah, he is really, really awesome. I think for me, the fist pump moment is probably when Willis is pounding the yellow bastard's head into the ground.
And you talk about the voiceover comes on.
Yeah, where he's like, at a certain point, I'm just pounding chunks of bone into the pavement,
bloodied floor, yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
Here's the one thing I don't understand. And tell me, I don't know if you've been in more fights than me in your life, but
I have.
Like, how do you hit somebody a bunch of times and not just like fuck your hands up? Like, how is it possible? Like, I mean, I understand like a proper punch, you can hit somebody, but like. Something like that, you're pounding cement. Like, wouldn't you just shatter your hand?
Yeah, I mean, that's not real life.
I mean, Marv gets hit by a car like four times in a row, and he gets stands up,
right,
back up.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, and that's why in movies like The Departed, I love when Leo is fighting those two guys in the beginning of the movie,
yeah,
and he's beating the shit out of them.
Yeah.
And then he goes and he finally punches him, and he breaks his hand.
Yeah.
And he's like, ah, God, and then he grabs the thing. That's what happens in real life. That's why it's called a boxer's fracture. That's why it's so easy to break that bone in your hand. I can't even imagine.
Which bone?
It's this thin bone on your pinky. It's not actually in your pinky, but it's the one that lines like the side of your hand.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
The pressure of if you hit your pinky on that, I know because I've broken it, is called a boxer's fracture. Happens all the time. So, yeah, at that point, his hands would be destroyed.
Yeah.
But that is That whole thing with the yellow bastard is just so gross. And the way they like describe the way he smells and his skin.
Well, also the use of color in this movie is really interesting. It's like it's really cool. There's only a couple scenes that are in color, like fully in color, but most of it's black and white. And then you have the green eyes with multiple characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Green eyes, blue eyes.
The blood, the white glasses.
Yeah, right, right. That's very much a throwback to the comic. That's something that Miller really made a point of. A lot of that stuff, like the final shot of Willis shooting himself in the head, is like that's like directly off the page.
I love those black and white silhouettes.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
Yeah,
let me see if there's other good fist pumps in here, guys. What we got in here? Hartigan's monologue at the beginning of the film. Bruce Willis trying to say it's a beautiful thing. I'm not sure what that is. When the bad guy's henchman gets pierced by an arrow. Oh, yeah, and he just stands like, he's just like, hey, would you look at that? It's right straight through me, the arrow and Miho.
Yeah.
She's great.
Deadly little Miho.
Yeah. There's only a couple in there. All right. Let's move on.
Let's move on to the next part of the show. So, next up, we've got star profiles. So, guys, there are we listed three stars, and this is confusing and also slightly sexist, probably on our part, because there is the whole sequence of, like, women, and like, so I guess you could say Rosario Dawson, but the movie is driven by, I mean, the movie is really driven by these three characters. It's not driven by Rosario Dawson. She's just probably the next on the list. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. I think the reason I didn't put any of the females down, I made the outline. I left out the women. If you want to be mad at somebody, it's me, and it's not because that. It's because you don't really.
No, we talked about it. Be fair. You texted me. No,
that's true. I did ask you about it. It's because. Like you said, the men kind of drive the story forward, and the women are kind of placeholders to keep the story in line. But what I will say is I think Richard Jarvie, someone made a really awesome thesis about the women, and I'm just going to say it, something about them. Yeah, one of the few movies that manages to use women in a very, like, in a hyper-sexualized style, but instead of ever objectifying them, it actually empowers them.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool. That's because you could have really went to a dark or dumb place with old time. I guess you couldn't have because it's based off of a comic.
Yeah.
But, you know, if Michael Bay would have directed it, who knows what would have happened.
God only knows.
But yeah, so for me, I felt like Mickey Rourke, Bruce Willis, and Clive Owen were the three main characters.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. There's three vignettes, and they want a protagonist for each one that you're supposed to care about. If I was going to... Well, so, okay, we'll talk about each of their careers, because, again, like, this is really, really interesting. Mickey Rourke, in 2005, like... I'm a big Mickey Rourke guy.
Yeah.
In the 80s, Mickey Rourke was like the guy. He comes along. He's like the super, super sexy dude. He has this great career from like 84 to like about like 91, 92, 93. And he just pissed off everyone in Hollywood. And he got pretty much blacklisted for a decade.
Because he was just a dick, to everyone. Everybody. And then he got in the motorcycle accident or whatever.
Yeah, and he was boxing for a while. Yeah. His face got all messed up. But if you start to look at the movies that he shows up in the 90s, like the mid-90s, it's pretty bad. He's like, there's like a solid decade where he just isn't doing anything. And then that's when he got The Wrestler. You know, he was like living in like a little tiny studio apartment with no money.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, like no money. He was living in like a 500 square foot apartment with like broke.
The Wrestler is so good.
So good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
the best thing you ever
him
did.
In that movie. Yeah, it's the best thing he ever did. And then this.
Yeah, and so in 03 he does Masked and Anonymous, which I kind of remember coming out, smaller role. Once Upon a Time in Mexico, 2003, the third film in the El Mariachi trilogy.
I love those. Rodriguez. I love that whole trilogy.
And then he does Man on Fire in 2004. He's the lawyer, Jordan something, right?
Yeah.
And then he does this movie, and then it's the next couple years that he starts to show back up, because The Wrestler's 08, and that's the big comeback. In this one, it's interesting. He's like, the prosthetics make him so unrecognizable as Mickey Rourke. He almost didn't get credit as being Mickey Rourke in this movie.
I didn't know who the hell he was in 2005. Mickey Rourke, like, I knew the name. And then, like, when someone showed me a picture, I was like,
you knowing the name is probably more than most people did at that point, our age.
Yeah, it's because I have sisters that all thought he was gorgeous
back
in the day, you know? And, like, so interesting. That guy's career has one of the most interesting careers ever. And then you go to the other side of that, kind of building his ways. You got Clive Owen, who did Beyond Borders in 2003, which I don't know.
Yep.
King Arthur in 2004, which is just not atrocious. Good. Who directed that?
That's Fuqua.
Yes,
Antoine Fuqua.
And then Closer in 2004, which is actually pretty critically renowned.
Have you seen Closer?
I really like Closer.
Love Closer.
Yeah.
Love Closer.
Natalie Portman, I fell in love with her then, and that was 14 years ago.
I watched it again sort of recently, and like,
I adore that movie. It's like, it's really good
and interesting. It's a great story. Everyone in it does a phenomenal job, but
R.I.P. Mike Nichols, man.
Yeah, but to speak on your point, what we were saying earlier is Clive Owen was still kind of a nobody.
Yeah, well, this is like his, this is his moment, sort of, right? So, like, this is his, I'm trying to think of, like, a good example of somebody who's kind of having the same, this is his Charlie Hunnam moment, I guess. Well, it's funny they both did King Arthur. No, he's bigger than that because
I mean,
2002 I think was Born One, right?
Yeah,
and he plays the asset.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, he shows up, and that's like he was like a no. I mean, he was in movies, but he was like not a known quantity in 02.
Have you seen Shoot 'Em Up?
No,
I hated that movie. I need to watch it again though, because I think because I know people love that movie secretly.
Yeah. And that's 02. So he does Beyond Borders, and then I guess he gets cast in King Arthur as they were just like, we'll take this guy who like people are talking about. He's buzzing right now, but we don't have to pay him that much money.
Mm-hmm.
And then Closer in 04 was a big one because that got a bunch of Academy Award nominations.
I think when Children of Men comes out is when you finally are like,
yeah,
oh, Clive Owen is a thing that's going to be around for a while.
Yeah, I think Children of Men comes out and it's like, okay, this guy's a...
Was that 06?
Yeah.
I love that movie so much.
06 or... I think it's 06.
We could do that on the show.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah, we will eventually.
That movie's phenomenal. The tracking shot in the car, the no-cut shot.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then you got the A-lister, the superstar that's bringing the names, everything. You got Bruce Willis, but it's weird.
Which is funny, right? He's in a cast this big, looking back on it, it just seems like he's part of the mix.
Yeah.
But at the time, he's far and away clearly the star.
Which is interesting, because if you look at what he had been doing, it was like he was on the back end of his highest moment.
Bandits, anyone?
Bandits, anybody?
I know you and I both like secretly love
that. I actually really do love Bandits.
I haven't seen
him
it
and
years.
Billy Bob and Kate Winslet's in it, right? Yeah, so he does Tears of the Sun in 2003, which is like he was in the middle of doing a lot of these like throwaway action movies.
Who directed Tears of the Sun?
I actually don't know.
Antoine Fuqua,
right? I was just gonna guess it again, but I was like, is this possible? Yeah, so he does Tears of the Sun, Fuqua, Whole 10 Yards, sequel to Whole 9 Yards. Whole 9 Yards is really good.
Never seen it.
It's actually really good. Whole 10 Yards is fine. It was like what you did in the early 2000s. Then you have Hostage in 2005.
Yeah, and his next couple years after this, he does Die Hard 4 in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
He does like Lucky Number 11 a couple years later, which I like.
I like.
But yeah, his career starts to go off a cliff right around 2010. Like I talked about this when I did Death Wish on Nerds and Suits recently. But like, dude, it's so bad. I was like, I'm just going to do something fun for you guys right now. I'm going to read the last 13 movies Bruce Willis has starred in.
16 blocks.
Yeah. And I read the 13 movies, and I was like, I have literally never seen or heard of any of these movies.
Other than The Expendables.
And I review movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it was outrageous. It was like Once Upon a Time in Venice, and Arsenal, and Marauders, and like...
Hearts War. Love Hearts War.
So in his day, Willis was like the biggest. I mean, because Armageddon's a 98, so like, and Sixth Sense is 99, Unbreakable's 2001, now, maybe.
It would be fun to do over under proper on all these guys, but we don't have time for that. But what I do want to ask you,
yeah,
when all is said and done, when we're looking at the history books 100 years from now, who ends up on top out of these three?
Oh, on the all-time list?
On the all-time list, based off of what they're going to do from now to the time they retire, which I think clearly Owen has the most potential to do more because he's the youngest. Willis is clearly the most famous out of any of them because he's done the most and been around the longest. And then you got Rourke, who's, you know, he could have been the one that won the Academy Award.
I know he was close in 08.
Yeah, so...
In my opinion, it's still pretty clearly Willis, and it's because...
You think it's always going to be, no matter what Owen does for the rest of his career.
Well, this is what I think. I think what it comes down to in... You know, you and I talk about movies for an hour, for hours every week. If you think about the 200 or so movies that get referenced, like, forever, like the movies that, like, will always and forever be talked about...
Mm-hmm.
All it takes in your career to be remembered is to star in one of those.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have one. So, like, when you talk about someone's career, it's like, we talked about, I think you and I were having a conversation about Jeff Daniels recently. It's like, okay, so he has Dumb and Dumber, and he has the scene in Newsroom.
I was going to say the Newsroom. Yeah, exactly.
those are the two things in Jeff Daniels' career that forever, for the rest of his entire life, he'll always be remembered for.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes. It takes, like, a couple things that are iconic. So Bruce Willis was in Die Hard. That happened. And he's in Pulp Fiction. Those are like two things that are like you can't take away from Bruce Willis,
And even The Sixth Sense, which like is really famous, probably won't be remembered.
God, Bruce Willis's career-defining role has got to be John McClane, but it's like, God, there's so many huge things he's done.
Yeah, like it really is, in the end, going to just be Die Hard is Bruce Willis's movie, and that's why Bruce Willis will be the most famous, because nothing that Clive Owen can do in his career, or has done, I should say, not can do.
Yeah.
But like, Children of Men's a great movie.
Children of Men's the only thing that would be considered, and then for Rourke, you got The Wrestler, but Clive Owen would essentially have to continue to do what he's been doing, do more than he has been for the last decade, and win an Oscar by the time he retires.
He'd have to be in a Best Picture winning movie that was a sweeper, where he was unbelievable, like, and it was like a popcorn movie. Like, that's what it takes, you know? And it's hard. That's not something, like, most people's careers don't have a single one, so I think that's why you have to say it's Willis, because he was in Die Hard. That's it.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's still making movies now, more so than, honestly, these other two guys. Really.
Rourke's, like, not really in movies anymore.
And like, is it because of Whiplash? The movie with J.K. Simmons and Miles Teller? Is it because of Whiplash?
No, because Whiplash is his payday. He like...
Well, I know, but it was like... You'd see The Wrestler,
yeah,
and you're sick, you're back, you're a great actor, and then it's like, here's a Marvel movie. Not only is it a Marvel movie, it's Iron Man,
yeah,
the most successful Marvel movie ever at the time, essentially, character, and you get to play the main villain in the second one that we're all dying to see.
Yeah.
And he kind of drops the ball. Not really his fault.
No, they just kind of blew it on Whiplash.
And then what did he do after that?
Like, he's in a bunch of movies since The Wrestler, but the funny thing is, if you look at 10 years of movies, it's like... You really almost can't come up with a single movie in that time other than just The Wrestler.
Like, you can't.
Marissa, Marissa Serafini's up in the booth, by the way, everybody. I introduced her at the beginning of the trailer section, but... Hello,
but I was talking over you and interrupting.
It's cool, man.
Hi, Marissa.
How are you, Marissa?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I enjoyed this film, too.
You do?
Yeah.
Awesome. Would you mind doing us a favor and pulling up Mickey Rourke's list on IMDb? I want to see what he did after The Wrestler to now.
Yeah, someone just said he should play... Look, Mickey Rourke could still play a sick Bond villain in Danny Boyle's Bond.
100%.
That would be amazing.
I heard he's still a cock to people, though.
Well, that doesn't help.
I heard he got humble for like a year, and then he just lost it.
Of course he did.
Yeah, I've never met him, never talked to him, never seen him in person.
And you know what? I honestly, like, when I hear things like that, it's like, I don't want him to have a good career.
I can't really see, because I'm kind of blind.
Marissa,
think.
Last 10 years, two... Oh, never
mind. Here. Okay, yeah. Randy the Ram Robinson. All right, so you keep going down. Okay, The Informers, I remember that. That's got the Flock of Seagulls song. Killshot's the Elmwood Leonard book. Those are both bad. 13, I don't know what that is. Okay, Iron Man 2, so there's his comeback, right?
Expendables.
Yeah. Passion Play, I think,
Immortals
is the one.
Immortals is that one. Is,
yeah, that's the one with Henry Cavill. Passion Play is with Megan Fox. Courier, Black November, Java Heat. I think he's in a movie called War Pigs coming up here pretty soon. Skin Traffic, Ashby, Sin City. Yeah, War Pigs.
What the hell?
Weaponized, Blunt Force Trauma.
All right, that's enough of that.
Whose list is worse, his or Willis's? I mean, that's pretty bad. For a guy that was a
Academy
hop,
Award
skip,
nominee.
And a jump away from... He should have won Best Actor that year. He was so good in The Wrestler. And looking back, are you ever going to watch Milk again? Ever.
I like Milk.
I mean, Milk's a good movie.
I've watched them both, like, twice.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen them both once, and I will never watch Milk again. It's just, there's nothing about that movie that I would feel compelled to go back and watch again.
You know what?
What?
Brolin.
Brolin's great in Milk.
He's so good in that movie.
Yeah, he is.
He's so good.
He's like the DA or whatever.
He's just another politician that's just completely on the other end.
Yeah,
you know
right.
What I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think he was closeted, though. That's what a lot of people... Anyway, we don't need to get into that talk.
So, yeah, all right. That's the career profiles. I mean, nothing against Milk.
No.
Movie was good.
I
like that movie. It's just like... Anyway, point is, moving on to production development and the people who made this movie. It is written by Frank Miller because Frank Miller wrote the comic books.
Yeah.
Frank Miller, for those of you that don't know, is probably on the short list, the top three or four most renowned comic book creators of all time.
Right, because it's like him,
Alan Moore.
Yep.
Neil Gaiman. You have a couple others. You have like Brian Michael Bendis, Grant Morrison, Mark Andreyko. although Andreyko's the best, and he's written some really awesome shit.
Has he really?
Andreyko's like a very well respected comic book.
I thought you were actually joking. No. Andreyko has written like a lot of very famous comic books.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love Andreyko.
When I met him the first time, like when we first met at Chmodown.
You fanboy.
I like said something to him and he like wouldn't take me seriously because they like thought I was my persona from Team Action.
Right.
He's like, yeah, sure. Okay, whatever. And then when
like,
we.
No, dude.
And we became friends and then I like finally got to actually talk to him about his comic books and he's like, oh, thank you so much for saying that. That's really
that's great. Kirkman?
Kirkman, yeah. Kirkman's great. But so Frank Miller did. Okay, Frank Miller created Elektra. He wrote the original Daredevil storyline where we meet Elektra, the death of Elektra, the bullseye stuff. He is the writer of Batman Year One, which Begins is pretty much based on, which is my favorite. Yeah, it might be my favorite comic we've ever written.
Batman Begins?
Oh, the comic. Batman Year One.
Oh, I thought, okay. Yeah.
That's like the Jim Gordon storyline. He's responsible for The Dark Knight Returns, which is, in a lot of cases, what, like... So there's some Dark Knight Returns in Batman versus Superman, and there's also some Dark Knight Returns in some of the Nolan stuff. But he's like about as famous as it gets. He also wrote and drew his own comics, so he would write them, but he also drew all of Sin City,
which is pretty rare, right? When someone writes and illustrates their own stuff.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Especially when it's that good.
Yeah, his style, unfortunately, as he got older, kept evolving. It got more and more stylized to the point that I found his like art to be like pretty much. Unreadable.
He didn't find that awesome Tony Scott perfection.
No, he just like got more and more stylized. It was not my favorite thing. But that's who Frank Miller is.
Yeah, and then if you go into the directors, it's interesting because so this movie actually has three credited directors, and that's Frank Miller, Robert Rodriguez, and Quentin Tarantino. Now, Tarantino only directed the driving scene.
Yeah, with the head in the front seat.
With the head in the seat, which is an amazing scene. It also makes sense that Tarantino directed it. It's so much like him. this movie was actually really directed by Robert Rodriguez and Frank Miller, and what they wanted to do was have all three of them credited, and then Robert Rodriguez wanted to be, then the DGA wanted just to credit one person, and they were going to make it Robert Rodriguez. He said he wanted no credit at all. He'll do it uncredited. He wanted Frank Miller to do it. Frank Miller refused, and then Robert Rodriguez threatened to leave the DGA, and now here we are, directed by 2.5 people. It's interesting, though. So Frank Miller... His career as a writer and his films being adapted to the screen was not going so well when this movie had come out. He was heavily reluctant to let anyone take on another one of his project because of RoboCop 2.
Yeah, he really didn't want to relinquish creative control because Frank Miller also did 300. So
yeah,
that's also his comic book.
But what happened was that Robert Rodriguez was completely in love with this, and he knew that he could do a good job. Essentially, he wanted a chance, so he went and he shot the Josh Hartnett shorts. Essentially, and screened that to get Willis and Miller and Alba and everyone on board. Essentially, he made this little screener and would just pitch that. That was his pitch project. And after Miller saw that, he was like, "This guy can do it.
Yeah,
he's actually going to do it." And then what I thought was so interesting is that, and I don't know if you know any more about this, since you did just talk about the writer, was just that like they were like, "We don't need a script."
Yeah, right. It's one of the gifts and the curses of this movie. It's like watching a movie that feels like you're watching Shakespeare or something.
Yeah.
It's like it's great, but it's also like the voiceover. There's so much voiceover. I mean, you know, that Robert McKee spoofed an adaptation played by Brian Cox, and you know, the voiceover is lazy, all that stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And like, there's so much voiceover in this movie, it hurts. It's like it's just one long string of narration, which makes sense if you're going to just adapt. If you're just going to take a comic book and you're going to just literally make this a comic book, then it makes sense because you can't just, you don't have the luxury.
You can't make a perfect comic book on screen without committing some cinema sins, as they say. And like narration, giving all your exposition is one of those things that they talk about in movies to never, ever do.
Yeah. And because I mean, like the stuff with like Josh Hartnett, you know, he's cradling her in his arms. She's twitching. And he's like, the silencer is a whisper.
Yeah. You hold her and tell her she stops twitching.
Yeah.
It's like, we see that.
Yeah, and so, like, I think that it works, but it's also, like, I don't know how actually... I mean, it works for this movie. It's just not, like, something that I would want to see, like, somebody like, well, that worked, let's do it again.
Right.
I actually never saw the sequel, did you?
I actually didn't either, and it was... this is the only reason I didn't put in the question, because a lot of people think that it's the most... the biggest letdown in a sequel ever.
Really?
Yeah. Is there a more disappointing sequel ever made, I think, is what the question was, but I... hadn't seen the second. I'd heard a few fans talking about it. They said there's a few redeeming qualities. Ava Green's great. Rourke comes back. I heard that the Gyllenhaal replacement, though, is pretty bad.
Really?
Yeah, or I don't know. If, yeah, I don't know. Hmm. All I know is that I've never had any desire to watch it, and no one has ever compelled me enough to go and see it.
A Dame to Kill For, is that what it's called?
Yeah,
for?
Yeah. That's what it's called.
Yeah, I would probably will never watch it. Well, actually,
we probably both will.
I know exactly why. Because it's a comic book movie, which fits into a category.
That's right. On a certain game that you and I both like to play.
A certain game.
Speaking of, I got some awesome storyline stuff to tell you as soon as these cameras are off, since you guys can't know anything.
Oh, I have some good ones to tell you, too.
Yeah, I know Christian talked to you last night.
Yeah.
What are we here for? all right, so critical box office, moving into this. This is interesting. So Dimension Films produced this movie. It cost $40 million to make. It was released April 1st in 2005. It grossed $74 million domestic for an additional $84 million wide for a grand total of $158 million, and it opened at number one at $29 million. Do you think anyone saw this coming?
That this movie would open at number one?
Yeah, it would do that well. You know, I mean, it's
huge cast.
Quadrupled its budget.
No. Huge cast. And I mean, it's a very cool, very stylized trailer. We talked about these movies that got made after this, right? So 300 and Watchmen and to some degree The Spirit, and those are all movies that were trying to just rip off this gimmick because this had been very successful, and I think it did catch people off guard a little bit, especially the fact that it made 84 worldwide. I think that's probably the most surprising thing to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that. Let's say maybe a third of that is Willis, but yeah, everything else is, you could even say half of it is Willis, to be generous, and it still is a big number.
People forget that 2005, we're still in the, 2005 is like the year I got on Facebook. YouTube wasn't around yet. Like, the Redbox generation hadn't happened. We weren't there yet. So it was still like movies came out in theaters, or movies were straight to video movies. So if Bruce Willis was in a movie in 2005, that was a theater movie. That was like,
yeah,
an event. So his name on a movie was people were going to go see it. That doesn't happen anymore very much with actors, even with huge actors. Like, I mean,
it was early in the show we were talking about Mickey Rourke, and I was being like, it wasn't like you could just go look him up and see all these things and go pull up clips. I wanted to say all that, but yeah, I was I felt so old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's true.
You couldn't. Yeah, you had to. I mean, there was like places online you could probably find clips here and there, but it wasn't like YouTube search top Mickey Rourke scenes and there's going to be 34 options on the first page. It's like, you know, that's the world we live in now. If I literally want to know something in the world.
Yeah.
What blows my mind is that somebody in the world is doing that. Somebody is taking the time to upload every scene and everything and everything
and
to YouTube.
We appreciate you for it, person, that we... That wherever you are, whatever basement you're in.
I've tried to find the She Needs to Matter to You scene from Deja Vu before, and it's not on there.
Someone needs to get on top of that. I don't know what you guys are doing.
There's a lot of scenes from Deja Vu that are missing on YouTube. Get on it, people.
All of Deja Vu is missing. You know what I realized that we should probably do real quick?
Yeah.
Because I think he's had such an interesting career, and I think because Daniel Sala, more so, requested that we do it. Robert Rodriguez has had a very interesting career. We kind of just blew past him in production development.
Yeah, well, he's definitely a big name. On the way here, I texted you. That was the thing I texted you as well, as running a few minutes late. Robert Rodriguez has had a wild career.
It's a hilarious career.
Well, okay, so I almost don't know how to rank his movies.
Right, right.
Because I can think of five movies that are relevant.
I can think of five movies he's done.
That's not hard to do.
Yeah.
But ranking them is more difficult for me because, like, I'll give you a good example. Okay, Spy Kids is on my list. Spy Kids 1. Spy Kids 1 is on my list. I actually think the Spy Kids movies are kind of sweet. I don't think we'd ever do one on the show, and they're, like, a little childish.
Yeah.
But it's an enjoyable movie. I've seen Spy Kids on TV before, and I like Spy Kids. I wouldn't know where to rank it.
If you say Spy Kids one more time, I'm going to kill you.
Spy Kids, dude. Spy Kids, dude.
So mine's gonna be. It was tough between El Mariachi and The Faculty, but I'm going The Faculty.
I figured you're gonna do The Faculty. Five. I just for some reason you love that movie, don't you?
It's so dumb. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
What do you got at number four?
I will go with Desperado.
Oh, really? That low?
Oh no, I'm not ranking.
Oh, you're not ranking.
I'm just throwing out my five.
Okay, all right.
Desperado's 100% on my list.
That's great. So my number four would probably be From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, that's on my list as well.
Yep.
I would go. I go Spy Kids, Desperado, From Dusk Till Dawn. Yep. Also on my list. Great, super entertaining movie.
Next, Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Yeah, not on my list.
It's a great one. Johnny Depp gets blinded and then he shoots people.
I go Grindhouse next.
I go,
Grindhouse is good.
Yeah, it's like silly,
yeah,
but it's sweet. Like Robert Rodriguez has, he's just such a, he has such a unique style.
Yeah.
And if you ever see, if you ever seen him or like the way that he dresses, he like wears like, you know, leather jackets, leather pants, like chaps, like bandanas. He's just like total, looks like a biker dude, like a biker rock and roll guy. He's like in a Guns N' Roses cover band.
He looks like an extra in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what he looks like. That's so funny. So then, so my full list in order is Sin City.
Yep.
Desperado.
Yep.
Once Upon a Time in Mexico, The Kay. Faculty. Or I mean, From Dusk Till Dawn, and then The Faculty.
So Grindhouse and Spy Kids are the only two. So that's where, that's where our list is different.
That's where they differ.
Yeah, I don't think we're missing anything important. I mean, for me, Spy Kids 2 was also an option.
I mean, but, so Machete.
Yeah, I don't,
but it
like
was
that,
it man. Was just kind of too silly.
Yeah, 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 and. El Mariachi's sweet, but I don't like it anywhere near as much as Desperado.
Yeah, it's funny because El Mariachi was supposed to be like the Rambo to Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Right.
But it was just like a little boring.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. They didn't have any money, so.
Yeah, that's,
I think,
true.
I think I've heard the story on that movie that he went around town.
I was, I think, obsessed with Antonio
Banderas.
I think
he went around town like pitching himself as like, I can't remember what the story is. There's a crazy story in El Mariachi where he like went around town pitching himself as like this like legendary director who had done, he just like said he had done all this crazy shit to get El Mariachi made.
You heard of E.T.?
Yeah. And he somehow he got the funding to make that movie. So
hey, good for him.
Yeah, that's my five. Out. If you guys have a different top five, Robert Rodriguez, if you disagree with us, then sound off, because if you think Spy Kids 3 is better than Spy Kids 2,
yeah,
or Spy Kids 1, or Spy Kids 4, Spy Kids, Spy Kids, Spy Kids.
Merch, you can turn them off.
So that's going to wrap it up on that one. Let's move on to the last bits of the show. We talked a little bit about box office. We haven't talked about critical.
Yeah, yeah. So critically, this movie, I was actually surprised it wasn't in the top 250.
Yeah.
Are you or no?
It does strike me as the kind of movie that would make the top 250. Like, right. This is the kind of movie that ends up where you're like,
okay, 165 makes sense.
Yeah, where you're,
yeah,
like,
the color and the, yeah, light, and
you're like, and a bunch of comic book kids that, yeah, were like ranking this movie when it came out. But like, I also don't think that I have that little faith in the top 250. I have like no faith, but also all the movies on the top 250 that I had, like the movies that I decried when you and I went through the list,
yeah,
initially, that I was like, none of these should be on the list,
like Rush
and Prisoners,
yeah,
are like two of my favorite movies, yeah, now.
Right, right, like, right.
Watched,
exactly.
I've watched Rush like twice, and I've watched Prisoners like four times. I like love those movies.
God, I love Prisoners so much. So
I tried to argue against Warrior at the time because like I didn't realize how much it meant to me yet.
Right.
Now I just was like, I'd like punch myself in the face now for that argument.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. I think I totally agree. It's a good movie. It did a lot for film, but it doesn't feel wrong that it's not on there.
No.
And a lot of time has passed. So, critically, by critics on Rotten Tomatoes, it was given a 77 by all, a 72 by top, and a 78 by audience, which I think is very fair. I think that makes a lot of sense.
72 feels correct. 8.0 feels too high.
Yeah, 8.0 does feel way too high. There's way too many good movies that we've seen that are not an 8.0 for this to be an 8.0. So I
do this thing some of you guys know about. It's called Nerds and Suits, and it's on anchor.fm, but it's also available. You can find it on Spotify, you can find it on iTunes, whatever. Just look up Nerds and Suits movies and you'll find I'm reviewing everything now and doing news every day. And my ratings I've been giving on the reviews, I've been giving A's, my, you know, B's, what have you. So
right.
Something Alex Kessler, guest of the show, and my buddy has suggested is that I have to start, it's called Nerds and Suits, I can't be using A minus plus, but he's like, you gotta give it like three pocket squares or something. He's like, you gotta
like
have
that.
Something clever, like, and so I was trying to think, like, an A plus should be 10 pocket squares, I think like that should,
you're
be
going
like,
out of 10.
Well, because I want to be able to A plus it, you know, A plus,
yeah,
A minus, B plus, right?
Okay yeah,
so
yeah.
I was thinking 10 pocket squares, but then like maybe, or maybe like an A is 10 pocket squares, and an A plus, the rare A plus, is 10 pocket squares on a bow tie. If you get a bow tie, it's a perfect.
If you
movie.
Get a bow tie,
like Love, Simon, I'd give a bow tie.
The guy, you would.
Love, Simon is the best movie of the year so far to me. Like, and I'm gonna be surprised if a movie comes along this year. Like, a movie would have to blow my mind in a way for me to not be like, that movie is just good and right and enjoyable in every single way I can think of. Like,
I absolutely love that movie, so I can't disagree with you.
It's like a simple movie, so it's hard for me to... But, like, for instance, Black Panther, great movie. Probably my third or fourth favorite this year. It's not even close for me. It's not even close.
So what is your point behind this, of the pocket squares conversation?
Oh, we were just getting to 8s and 72s and stuff.
Right, so what would you have given it, I think is what you were going to say.
What, Love, Simon?
No, this movie, the one we're talking about on our show. Can we just talk about Love, Simon
really quickly? I guess. I mean, I would give this movie a 72. So let's see. If an A plus is 10 pocket squares and a bow tie, that would mean that that would mean that an A is 10 pocket squares.
Yep.
A minus would be 9. B plus would be 8. Right. B would be 7. And a so 6.5 pocket squares. No, six pocket squares.
Six.
A B minus. Squares.
A B minus.
Six pocket squares. 6 out of 10.
Yeah, that feels fair.
Yeah.
I need a cool rating system.
I guess I could give it 3 out of 5 because it's the exact same thing.
Sweaty shirts. Out of how many sweaty shirts did Andrew get? I give it 9 sweaty shirts. Well, it's not quite Edge of Tomorrow episode of AMA sweaty, but it's close.
I'm sweating.
All right, what's your favorite line?
I think it's... See, that's the hardest question of the whole episode.
It really was.
Because the whole thing is just, like, poetic writing.
Yep.
The whole entire thing. So, like, I don't know. There's moments. I do really like that line, the silence or a whisper, the Josh Hartnett line at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that line is really, really cool. I also really, really like when Alexis Bledel is walking by the car and he like grabs her or pulls a gun on her and she's like, oh honey, sugar. You just went and did the dumbest thing you could do.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like a lot of really sweet ones. Marv has a lot of really good I like when Marv is yelling at Carlo Gugino, and he's like, this is the old days. This is all or nothing.
Yeah, he's going all crazy.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He's great in there.
That part's sweet.
Let's see. When Owen's talking about Rosario Dawson, he's like, all kinds of death is about to hit 20 yards away from us, and I still can't take my eyes off of her. Like, my warrior woman, she almost rips my head off.
Yeah.
Like that. I love you, baby, always and forever. Or I love you, baby, forever and never. Those are great. But I actually think, and I don't think this is actually in the theatrical version, because you don't see Marv's mom in the theatrical version.
No.
And it's in the director's cut. He says, you know, mom cleans the room every week like she used to when I was a kid, thinking I'm coming home. The old smells make me cry like they do right now. And it's just such a cool thing, because you think about, like, the way that your house smells that you grew up in, you know? And the way that your mom smells, the way that everything, your room, and, like, the idea of Marv being this crazy dude and the fact that his mom is still just waiting for him to come home. And then he comes home and you see Marv, like, break down and cry. It was just so cool, and I think that's such a great line. And it sucks that it's not completely relatable to everybody, because probably not everyone's seen the director's cut. But
yeah, I didn't watch it.
I love that line.
Yeah,
yeah, it was really good.
All right, guys, we are going to have to breeze through the last couple bits here on the show. We do want to answer Paul Harris's question. You made reference to it already.
Yeah,
Paul Harris asked the question: is there a more disappointing movie sequel? There's a lot of disappointing
Batman
movie sequels.
Batman vs Superman,
Pacific Rim Uprising. No, there's a lot. I never watched it. Neither did you.
Sure. So what's your biggest letdown sequel?
It's probably the Two Jakes, the Chinatown sequel.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
That's one of the worst sequels ever made. It's like damn near unwatchable.
I think mine's 28 Weeks Later.
Oh, that's a bad
one. I know that it's not horrible.
Yeah.
But for how much I love 28 Days Later, it was a super big letdown.
I mean, Transformers 2. I would say by and large.
That's so funny. Transformers 2 almost was my number one.
93% of sequels are awful.
Like, yeah.
They're almost all bad.
Dark Knight Rises, Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Both terrible.
Movies are terrible.
Michael Campbell, longtime fan of the show and of us on the Schmodown. If you could take the way this movie was shot, the aesthetic, the black and white, the CG background, the overall look and color, really, and apply it to one other film, what would you choose and why? I pick Logan.
Yeah, that'd be dope.
Because I never saw the black and white Logan, but I know it's just Logan in black and white.
Yeah.
But if they would have, like, taken the black and white version and made it like this,
yeah,
I would have lost it.
Yeah, that sounds really, really cool. I might do it with, like, more of, like, one of those sort of, like, espionage, like, really creepy kind of, like... Like, I might do it with, like, some sort of a courtroom thriller or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that kind of a thing. Or, like a Michael Clayton type of movie.
Like, Michael Clayton or Lincoln Lawyer meets, like, some sort of...
Michael Clayton would be pretty cool, because it would add an extra level to the, like... It would add an extra level to the, like, kind of, like, creepy by the numbersness of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. I mean... Honestly, we've seen a lot of people try it over and over again with, like, Sucker Punch and things like that. It just doesn't really work.
No, Zack Snyder made, like, a whole career out of this style. So, like, not this exact look, but, you know, this type of thing. So,
be a master.
All right, guys, there are 3 action movie categories. Totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. Totally legit movies are like Gladiator. Totally ridiculous movies are like Con Air and Face Off. And ridiculously legit middle category, it's like Point Break, Predator, Speed, held together by one really strong component. I would give this movie a ridiculously legit. I put it in the middle category.
Yeah, I have to agree. And I've said this a lot recently. I think it's because they don't want it to be either of the other two. If this movie is totally legitimate, it's just not that good. And if it's totally ridiculous, then who wants to watch it again?
Yeah, completely agree. It's like, it's just... He gets, like, they're all superheroes. They're all just superheroes. And there's, like, right. some bunch of, like, tongue-in-cheek, you know, like, winky-wink type of moments. And that's fun, but it obviously is, you know, a silly movie in some ways, but it's badass in other ways.
Yeah.
And for me, like, the other thesis that I could have used is just Mickey Rourke is far and away the best part of this movie. Like, that's the other thing I would have said, and that's what I come back to. It's what I thought about going back to watch it again. He's the thing that makes this movie feel the best.
Yeah. And then the women, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, Rosario Dawson, Alexis Bledel, and Brittany Murphy, they're all really good.
Yeah.
And they're all, and Jessica Alba, they're just great. I think what it is they're all like the purest thing in the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even if they're living in Old Town or whatever, it's like their intentions and what, yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah,
love it.
For sure. That just brings us to the last part of the show today, guys, and that's going to be called The Pitch. So, you know, I saw Pacific Rim Uprising last night. I'll be posting my review here in just a minute. And it wasn't that good. It was pretty entertaining, and it definitely felt like Transformers' version of Pacific Rim.
Right.
But the first Pacific Rim is fucking sweet. So we're going to do that on the show next week.
Yeah, it'll be sweet. I've only seen it the once in theaters. I don't remember it well, but I do know that people love this movie.
Yeah, Guillermo, best director, just won it, so I think it's a great time to do it. I just watched it recently, and it's like totally like dumb action movie from the 90s feel, which I'm really excited for.
Perfect for the show. Really quickly, we didn't mention Elijah Wood at all, other than him just doing the cameo.
Yeah.
Creepy as hell.
Creepy.
Right?
Real creepy. Great. Super creepy. Yeah. So, all right, guys, that's going to wrap us up. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to find me, you can follow along with my career at Ben Bateman Media, and be sure to check out Nerds and Suits at Anchor. Follow Nerds and Suits on Twitter. It would mean the world to me.
You guys can find me at Andrew Guy. Follow the show at AMA Podcast. Find the Facebook groups. And also go to patreon.com/teamaction to see more content you won't see here.
Yeah, a bunch of videos coming out this week. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.